The Lord be with you. There is a place where every language of the world is spoken, where world-class musicians will serenade you for free while you buy fresh pastries, a place where children and elders who were born on different continents will sit across from each other and make funny faces, a place where beggars and Wall Street brokers will stand side by side. This place is not heaven. This place is the New York City subway. Truly, people ask me what I miss most about New York, and what I say is I miss the subway because the subway is a magical place, a place that is literally the crossroad of every culture. And it costs to get in only $2.75, $2.75, and a willingness to hike up and down three flights of stairs, to elbow your way through a maze of century-old tunnels, and to stand the smell of stale urine. Which is to say, for as much as I love the New York City subway, there were days when I was really tired and I thought to myself, you know, today I'll just take a taxi. And I want to be clear, a taxi is not necessarily faster than the subway, especially not going through Manhattan. But there are days in which I would think to myself, I don't want to experience the whole world crammed into a train car. What I want right now is the peace and quiet of my own little backseat. And so, while I couldn't afford to do it every day, there were days where I would pay the many times more it costs to ride in a cab. You see, money gives us that power. Money gives us the power to separate ourselves from the world and all its confusion and problems. And because of that, you can think of money as a machine that has the ability to make our world bigger or to make our world smaller. And on the side of making our world smaller, a little bit of money can separate us from the world for a little bit of time. Right? We can use a little bit of money to go on a vacation and get away from our problems, or even just to go out to the movies for an afternoon and forget about our worries. But with a little bit more money, we can separate ourselves from the world for a little bit longer. Perhaps we have enough money to move into a neighborhood where we don't have to see poverty and we don't have to see crime. Now, Jesus, in today's gospel lesson, tells us a story of a rich man who uses his money to separate himself from others forever. Jesus doesn't tell us the name of this rich man, but Jesus says that he dresses himself in purple, which is to say he wears the most expensive clothing money can buy. And Jesus says he feasted sumptuously every single day, while outside his gate, a poor man named Lazarus, who is covered in sores, starves, and yearns to eat just the scraps that would fall from the rich man's table. But the rich man is able to afford a home and a gate around his home, and so he's able to close that gate so that he doesn't have to look at Lazarus and his unpleasantness. He can separate himself from Lazarus in that way. And the rich man succeeds in separating himself from Lazarus, not just in life, but also in death. Because Jesus says both the rich man and Lazarus die. And the rich man discovers that he finds himself in a place of torment after death, and he is being burned by fire. And he sees that Lazarus is also there in death. Lazarus is at peace with Abraham, the father of our faith, and so the rich man calls out. But interestingly enough, the rich man doesn't speak to Lazarus, not even in death. Instead, the rich man speaks to Abraham. And the rich man tells Abraham, send Lazarus to me, send him to get a little bit of cool water so that he can cool off my tongue because I'm burning up in this fire. He tells Abraham to send Lazarus as a servant. And then he also tells Abraham to send Lazarus as a servant again. He tells Abraham to send Lazarus as a servant to warn people, to warn the living so that they don't enter this place of torment. But as Meredith noticed in our Bible study this past Tuesday, the rich man doesn't tell Abraham to send Lazarus to warn the world that all people might escape the fires of this torment. No, the rich man says, just send him to my brothers. They're the only ones he wants to have saved. To say the rich man has separated himself from the whole world. In life, his heart's desire was to separate himself, and in so, in death, he gets his heart's desire. In death, he separates himself from Lazarus. He separates himself from Abraham, and perhaps he even separates himself from God. You see, money is a machine, and it has the power to make our world smaller, but it also has the power to make our world bigger. Now, to understand how money can be made to make our world bigger, I interviewed a gentleman who gave a gift to this congregation of $30,000. I interviewed him, and in the interview, he said that he'd like to remain anonymous, in large part because, as our reading from 1 Timothy today says, that those who are rich in this present age should not be haughty. But the guy said that I could use what he says in the interview so that for my sermon. And he says, if you all figure out who he is, he's okay with that too. And so I asked him just straight up. I said, why did you give the church so much money? And he said, well, he received a large inheritance from a wealthy relative, and he felt that he should tithe 10% of it to the church. And I thanked him for that, but I said, you know, you could have held on to that money to take care of you as you grow older in age, and then just left it to the church in your will. Why did you give it while you were still alive? And he said, well, there's a few reasons. He said, first of all, is the honest truth is I don't need it. He said, I'm fortunate enough to have a really good pension. And he said, I live a simple life. You know, I don't go off to the casinos. And perhaps, once again, like it says in 1 Timothy, where if we have food and we have clothing, we will be content. Now, this particular gentleman would probably also add having access to health care, because he's getting on in age. But to say he has lived simply. And he says, that's also how he made his money in the first place. He said to me, Ben, I'm a nickel and dime millionaire. He said, I had a solid job, but not something that brought in incredible amounts of money. But I lived simply, and I managed my money well, and over time, it grew. And so he says, the other reason I wanted to give while I was still alive is because I want to see what my money does. Which makes sense. And a part of that is, he says, look, I made my money by managing it carefully, and I want to make sure the money that I give continues to be managed carefully. And so he does a lot of research on all the organizations that he gives to, and he tries to make sure that when he gives to an organization, they're not using more than 10% of their budget for administrative costs. And then he goes and he gives to the organizations who are supporting causes he feels really passionate about. He gives generously to Rotary, to Doctors Without Borders. He has supported a local public art gallery here in Chico, and he supported Faith Lutheran Church. But when he gave to Faith Lutheran Church, he didn't just give a chunk of cash. What he did is he gave the money to pay for the solar panels that we now have on our roof. And he said, look, I won't be here in 25 years. But I care about this planet, and I want to make sure that I'm living my life to take care of the people who will be here when I'm gone. And in our first reading today from Jeremiah chapter 32, we hear of someone else who uses his money to care for the people who will live in a world that he won't see. Now, the reading from Jeremiah had a lot of names in it, so you may have glazed over while you listened. So let me recap it for you, which is to say, Jeremiah is at a time when the army of Babylon has surrounded the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is under siege. And Jeremiah is in jail because Jeremiah has been telling everyone the Babylonians are going to burn down our city. And that's been really bad for morale. And so the king said, okay, Jeremiah, you got to stop telling people this. But the king recognizes Jeremiah as a prophet, so he feels bad about killing him, so he just sticks him in jail. That way people won't hear him. And while Jeremiah is in jail, Jeremiah has a vision from God. And God says to Jeremiah, your cousin is going to come to you and offer to sell you a field right outside of Jerusalem. Now, as a reminder, any field outside of Jerusalem has an angry Babylonian army on top of it. So this is the equivalent of someone coming to you on November 8th, 2018 and saying, I have a great house for sale in Paradise. Would you like to buy it? Which is to say, no sane person would take that deal, right? You don't know what's about to happen, but you know it's going to be bad. And yet Jeremiah takes the deal. He says, yeah, I'll buy the field. And not only is he willing to buy the field, he says, I'll pay full price. I'll pay full price, and I want to make sure that we go through the title company. I want to make sure that deed gets signed and sealed, not just in the presence of witnesses, but I want all the people of the city to see that I am buying this field. And then he puts it in an earthenware jar and buries it. And so that you understand, to this day, we are still digging up earthenware jars from the Holy Land and finding in there manuscripts that are over 2,000 years old. To say Jeremiah has put the deed for this plot of land in the safest place imaginable, because he believes that someday it's going to matter. Now, I want to think for a moment about all the other things that Jeremiah could have done with his money. Right? Jeremiah could have used that money to make his life a lot easier. He's in jail. He could have used that money to pay for better food. He could have used that money to bribe the guards to go easy on him. He could have used that money knowing that soon the Babylonian army is going to take over the city, and it sure would be nice to be able to bribe those soldiers. Jeremiah could have tried to create a cozy little bubble for himself, to insulate himself from all the problems that are going on around outside his walls. Jeremiah could have used his money to make his world smaller. But he doesn't. Jeremiah uses his money to make his world bigger. Jeremiah uses his money to connect himself with the suffering of his people. He says, okay, the land around us is going to burn, but I want you to know that that land is my land too, on the most literal level. And he says, that land may burn, but I have faith. I have faith, and I want you to have faith too. Don't give up. Don't give up on yourselves, and most of all, don't give up on God, because things may be bad now, but they're going to get better. You may not see it. I may not see it. But God will see it, and because of that, I have hope. Jeremiah says, I don't need to close my eyes to the suffering around me. I can look them full on in the face because I know that I am a part of God's team. I know that I am a part of God's team, and God is working to restore this land, and God is on your team too. So let us have faith because God never fails. And I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is so that you don't lose heart. That's what Jeremiah does with his money. And that's what the donor that I interviewed did with his money as well. He said to me that his greatest joy in the money that he has given is coming to church and seeing the solar panels on our roof, not because they're particularly pretty. No, he gets joy from seeing those solar panels because when he comes to church, he sees them and knows that those solar panels are helping faith do ministry. He knows that those solar panels are helping faith transform lives. And he specifically requested that the council use that money that we save on our utilities to support the social ministry of the church. And so the council uses that money to help pay the salary for the position of our director of youth and service, which means that when Coulter is out organizing a mattress distribution or is out organizing God's work, our hands helping fix up Paradise Lutheran Church, or organizing Camp Noah to provide a summer camp for children affected by the fire, this donor is a part of each and every one of those ministries. Every time a life is transformed through those ministries, this donor's life becomes a part of those lives. The donor said to me, "Look, I'm at the age now where my life is contracting. But because I give, my life has gotten so much bigger." He says, "Look, I love art, but I can't make art, and I don't have the strength to hang it on a wall. And yet, by giving to the local gallery, I can be a part of sharing the beauty of art." He says, "I love now to read the news from all over the world because it's no longer just depressing stories of places that mean nothing to me." He said, "Because I give to these international organizations, now the stories that I read are stories of the people whose team I am on, with whom I am working to face their challenges." And he said, "Look, I may not see the solution to their problems, but God will. And now I know that I'm on God's team. And God will see the victory, because God never fails." And the incredible thing about God is God uses God's wealth in this same way. To say, God could look down at this mess of humanity and say, "Ah, they're a lost cause." God could close the gates of heaven and look away, but God doesn't. Instead, God takes the greatest riches in the universe, which is to say God's divine self, and God says, "I'm going to invest it all in humanity." In Jesus Christ, God becomes fully human to share our life with us, to say their suffering is going to be God's suffering. Their struggles is going to be God's struggles. Their failures will be God's failures. But God's not worried about that, because God is on our team. And God knows each and every person is worth saving, and no person is a lost cause, because they may not see the salvation, but God will. God will see the salvation for them. Look, the message today is a simple one. It's that money is a machine, and we can use money to separate ourselves from others and make our world smaller, or we can use money to connect ourselves with others and make our world so much bigger. And so let us do what 1 Timothy commends us to do. To be rich in good deeds, to be generous and ready to share, so that we may take hold of the life that really is life, a life where every language of this world is spoken, where music plays as we share pastries, a place, a life, where elders and children from different continents make funny faces at each other, and where beggars and Wall Street brokers stand side by side. Not just in the subway of New York, but for all eternity, united in the grace of Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.